This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This is MPB News.
Hi, this is Karen Brown. Thanks for checking out the Mississippi Edition podcast. If you like what you hear, click subscribe, hit like, or leave us a comment if your app has that feature. Then find other MPB podcasts by searching MPB Think Radio on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Friday, July 31st. I'm Ashley Norwood, in for Karen Brown, and this is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, education and the economy take center stage as Mississippi's worst month of the coronavirus pandemic comes to a close. Then, with a steady trend of high cases, the state's hospital system remains strained. Plus, how the new chair of the Mississippi Democratic Party plans to broaden its coalition. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. School districts are submitting their plans for reopening to the Department of Education for review. Districts were provided with three options for reopening, including classroom instruction, online instruction, or a hybrid of the two. Because of rising coronavirus numbers, some school districts are now delaying their reopening or opting to go online only. The state is also currently operating without a passed education budget bill. Governor Tay Reeves assures money has been transferred into the MAEP ahead of school openings, but says he will not call a special session of the legislature, citing safety concerns.
We are not pressed on time. You know, when you look at our numbers of COVID-19 positive cases, there were an awful lot of community spread that occurred because of the outbreak that occurred at the Capitol. And it occurred in every community across our state. And so we do not want to bring the legislature back for a special session until I am convinced it is absolutely safe to do so.
While unwilling to call the legislature until it is completely safe, Reeves continues to advocate for in-person learning as school districts hit the deadline for restart plans. Reeves says just as there are risks associated with on-campus learning, there are also risks associated with keeping kids out of school.
We know that we are not going to mitigate 100% of the risk on either side of this equation. And so what we must do is look for innovative ways to reach what we all believe is the right outcome. And the right outcome long term for kids is that they are in an environment that is loving and that produces and provides an educational opportunity.
During his press briefing yesterday, Reeves quoted CDC Director Redfield regarding the risks associated with students staying home, including losing access to mental health services, meals, and best learning practices. However, despite emphasizing these essential school services as priorities in his push to reopen schools, as Lieutenant Governor, Reeves actively campaigned against Ballot Initiative 42, a constitutional amendment that would have required full funding of the MAEP, thereby allowing more schools to offer or expand those services. Reeves says he believes school plans should outline ways to mitigate the risks of transmission in schools.
I do believe that there are schools that have plans in place where they can mitigate risk and minimize risk and bring kids back to school as early as the second week in August. I think that that's what a number of the districts are looking to do. Not all of them, in fact, a large number are not. But I do think if you implement proper mitigation rules, ensure social distancing, ensure the kids are wearing masks, ensure that the teachers are teaching in a way that have either face shields or masks, that there are ways to minimize risk, mitigate risk. And that is true a week from now. It's also true a month and a half from now.
The deadline comes as Reeves adds 8 new counties to his executive order requiring masks in public settings. The order now applies to 37 counties and is in effect until August 17th. As communities get ready for school restarts, state epidemiologist Dr. Paul Byers cautions residents about transmission among extended families, advising Mississippians to assume everyone has COVID-19.
You know, we're seeing a lot of transmission within nuclear family groups and a lot of transmission that's occurring just from, you know, interacting with that family member that you don't see very often, or interacting with folks and family members at gatherings like funerals. And so we're at a point now, guys, and we've said this before, where we need to act as if every single person that we come in contact with has COVID. And we need to act as if we have COVID and do those measures we need to do to protect us from transmitting it to other folks. You know, we know there's a lot of asymptomatic people out there that can transmit the infection. We know that there are people out there who may have minimal symptoms and never even recognize that they're infected. Wear a mask. This does prevent transmission significantly.
Some advocates for traditional schools cite the struggling economy as a reason to get kids back in the classroom. The nation experienced a sharp drop in the GDP during the second quarter as unemployment continues at high rates. Corey Miller with the Mississippi Institutions of Higher Learning tells our Desiree Frazier how Mississippi compares to the rest of the nation during a time of economic insecurity.
The U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis just released their second quarter number for U.S. real GDP, which they said fell at a seasonally and inflation adjusted annual rate of 32.9%. That's a 9.5% drop compared to the prior quarter. Those are the steepest declines we've seen in 70 years. So we're in mostly an unprecedented environment. We don't know what Mississippi's economy has done in the second quarter yet. The official number won't come out till the end of October. But we figure to see a similar decline as the U.S. saw. Probably not quite as steep, but still we think it's going to be in the range of 20-25% on annualized basis just for the second quarter. Again, that's worse than we saw during the Great Recession in a single quarter. But that, given all that, Mississippi's economy has probably held up better than we were expecting it to a couple of months ago, and it's probably held up better compared to some other states in the Southeast region and certainly some states around the country. Typically what happens in Mississippi when we have a recession, it's our manufacturing sector that gets hit the hardest. So in terms of our overall economy, our gross domestic product in Mississippi, manufacturing and government are the two biggest components of that. And they haven't been hit as hard as we've seen in a typical recession. In some sense, obviously, things aren't good, but in some sense, we're doing better than some of our neighbors and what we thought we were doing a couple of months ago.
The unemployment benefits that added $600, do you think that helped our economy?
I think it did. I think if you look at some of our sales tax numbers, those have been surprisingly strong in the past 2-4 months, and that may have something to do with it. That's a question I think economists around the country are asking what's going to happen in these individual states if that some of these benefits that the federal government has been providing during the pandemic, if they cease.
Which they just did.
Yeah, well, you know, they could always
put another one in place.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Enact something again. So we'll have to see how much of this activity changes if we don't get a extension or replacement of those type of benefits.
Okay. Well, Corey Miller, we really appreciate you speaking with us and helping us to understand some of this information.
Sure.
Miller says the state's leisure and hospitality industries have also suffered because of the pandemic. When asked about the second quarter economic numbers yesterday, Governor Reeves politicized the question, echoing rhetoric from the Trump administration.
And so to me, the question that every American has to ask themselves is, do we want to vote for someone in November? Because let's keep in mind that this entire economic calamity that occurred in the second quarter in the U.S. was not a result of bad public policy. It was a result of the China virus being unleashed upon the world. And so what every American's got to ask themselves when they go vote in November is, would I rather elect a leader that led us to 2017, 18, and 2019, one of the greatest economic recoveries in American history, or would I like to go back to the economic policies of Obama and Biden, in which we had the slowest economic recovery on record in the history of America? And I think that's a fairly easy question to answer, and I think it's a fairly easy answer.
Coming up, how the new chair of the Mississippi Democratic Party plans to broaden its coalition. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, I'm Walt Grayson. Join me on Mile Marker, a Mississippi Roads podcast about the wild, weird, and wonderful stories of Mississippi. You can listen by going to mpbonline.org/radio or by using your favorite podcasting app. And of course, all of MPB's other great podcasts are there too. Join me as we hit the roads of Mississippi on Mile Marker.
Coming August 1st to your favorite podcasting app.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Ashley Norwood. Coronavirus cases are on the rise in Mississippi, and hospitals are preparing for more COVID-19 positive patients. Medical experts like Dr. Jonathan Wilson says these impending cases could overwhelm the healthcare system. Wilson is the incident manager and chief administrative officer at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. He tells our Kobe Vance, if coronavirus hospitalizations increase beyond what the hospital can handle, it will be difficult to maintain the standard of care Mississippians expect.
The other hospitals around the state are now equally as full, and so finding an intensive care unit bed around the state is quite a challenge for a patient that's critically ill. And so our teams that manage those type movements on a daily basis have really been stressed to try to find the right bed for patients around the state.
And how has that changed healthcare within your hospital?
Well, right now, to be honest, we're running two hospitals inside of one brick and mortar. We have a COVID hospital and a non-COVID hospital. You know, we still see the same number of heart attacks and strokes, trauma victims, and everything else comes through our doors just as it did before COVID-19. It's just that COVID-19 is now occupying a lot of capacity that we didn't have to deal with beforehand. And so trying to manage those two patient populations within one hospital really puts a strain on all of our resources, both number of beds and what we can physically have open, as well as our staff and our physicians are really stretched to the limit.
What are we going to? Where do you think we might be in 2 weeks from now when we see new cases over the thousands every single day? It seems. Are you concerned that in the next few weeks you might have to go from the 30% COVID, 74% regular hospitalizations to even more COVID hospitalizations?
Yes, sir. And a short answer is yes, absolutely. That's what we're concerned about. If the COVID-19 case rates continue to proliferate, as quickly as they are with community spread, we know that we're seeing roughly 80 to 90 hospitalizations for every 1,000 cases of COVID-19 that we see. Now, the hospital admissions tend to lag behind the new case reports by about a week to 10 days. So we know that even if we were to start seeing our total case numbers flatten out, we've still got a week to 10 days where we're going to see continued hospital admissions across the state. And really the concern is if we get much more stress or pressure on our healthcare system, it's going to break.
You know, we've talked about breaking the healthcare system in the past, and since we're getting closer to it, I'd like to get a little bit of time. What does that look like? What is it going to look like whenever you have to say, okay, we cannot care for patients in the same way that they need anymore?
So that is something that has been contemplated, and we have a term called alternate standards of care. So you have three phases of alternate standards of care. You have your normal operations, contingency operations, and then crisis. And we are in contingency right now. But when you get to the next phase of crisis standards of care, that's when you have to start altering really how we take care of patients. And so instead of having one nurse take care of two patients, that one nurse may have to take care of three or four patients. We may not give bed baths as frequently as we do, or some of the other things that we do on a normal operation. If we are spreading out and putting patients in non-traditional areas of the hospital, then we also have to change our staffing patterns to be able to accommodate that.
And are these things that are only going to impact COVID patients, or will this impact every person seeking hospitalizations?
Yes, sir. It would impact every patient. To be honest, right now, our problem is really non-COVID intensive care unit needs. Now, that's driven because of COVID-19 occupying some of the resources we would normally have available in our intensive care units. But since those resources aren't available, then we really have a limited amount of capacity for non-COVID-related emergencies.
Will people be able to get care in the next few weeks if coronavirus cases continue to take up space in hospitals?
I can tell you we will do the best we can. I have no crystal ball to be able to forecast what the future will look like, not for tomorrow and not for 2 weeks and not beyond. I can just tell you that we will use every resource we have available at the medical center to take care of the patients as best we can. But if cases continue to climb and we continue to have a strain on our system, how we provide care and what the normal accepted level of care is today may not be the same in the future if we continue to see a strain due to COVID-19. So if we were going to, let's say we had a patient that had a diabetes issue, maybe they needed some help managing their diabetes. That may be something that we have to do on a follow-up clinic visit and have a series of clinic visits rather than admitting the patient to the hospital because there's no room in the hospital. So we really have to go from triaging how we take care of patients and shift that thought process around triage on how we admit patients as well. You know, a lot of folks are calling our healthcare providers and nurses and physicians and therapists and ancillary folks as being the front line on COVID-19. And as she put it, we're really the last line of defense for COVID-19. The front line of defense is with the general public heeding the advice of our experts and wearing a mask, avoiding large groups, staying 6 feet apart, washing our hands, and staying away from sick individuals and not going to work sick. So there are a lot of things that we can do individually that would be much more impactful than anything I can do from the medical center's perspective.
Dr. Jonathan Wilson is the incident manager and chief administrative officer at UMMC. If you have questions or concerns about the coronavirus pandemic, tune in to MPB TV, Think Radio, or online Wednesday, August 5th for a special At Issue. State Health Officer Dr. Thomas Dobbs will be answering your questions live starting at 7 p.m. To submit your questions, visit mpbonline.org/coronavirus. Coming up, how the new chair of the Mississippi Democratic Party plans to broaden its coalition. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Hey, this is Malcolm White. I'm one of the hosts of the Mississippi Arts Hour, the arts interview show on Think Radio. Every week, we talk with visual artists, musicians, as well as people who help bring the arts to their communities. We hear about how each artist learned their craft and get some insight into their creative process. You can hear the Arts Hour every Sunday at 5 p.m. or listen anytime by subscribing to the show through your favorite podcast app.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Ashley Norwood. A retired judge is taking the helm of the Mississippi Democratic Party with the goal of diversifying its ranks. New Mississippi Democratic Party chair, retired Judge Tyree Irving, says the party must be more racially diverse to prevail in the state. Irving, who has served in leadership roles in the party at the county level, tells Our Desiree Frazier he wants to dismantle the narrative that the Democratic Party caters to one race.
I'm committed, and again, when I tell people, when I answer this question, I tell them I'm speaking with a clear mind. My vision is to turn this state blue. Now, I know that's a tall order, and I know that takes some time. But I think I have the communication skills, the honesty and the integrity to engage other folks, white folks who have fled this party to the Republican Party. I believe just good, honest discussion, being frank and being honest, I can bring some of them into this party. I didn't take this position to preside over an all-black party. I recognize that we are only we, meaning blacks, and if we're going to prevail as Democrats statewide, we have to have, whites actively involved in the party. And in order to, get that the way it needs to be, we have to each come together and have some frank discussions about how we go forward. Most Mississippians are not rich enough to be Republicans, and that includes white Mississippians as well. They're just not. I mean, you don't have enough money. There's so many white Mississippians, in my judgment, that vote against their economic interests all the time. I think I can be helpful in showing them why that's what they're doing, and that there's a home for them in the Democratic Party.
Now, when you say they vote against their interests, what do you mean by that?
Well, the history of the Democratic Party, that most of the programs that you might refer to as safety nets or provide assistance for poor people and assistance that they will need in their golden years, beginning back in the 30s with the institution of the Social Security program, Medicare. All of these programs were result of the Democratic administrations. And many whites in this state don't even know that the majority of public assistance that is received in the state is received by white folks. I think there's been a concerted effort to paint a picture that Democrats are all about just giving away money and stuff to lazy black people who are not working, who don't want to work. And quite frankly, that's just not the truth. And I'm going to speak the truth armed with statistics about what white folks are receiving in the state and explain to them that Republicans have voted against all of that stuff and continue to do so. And I think just the average person who's not keeping up with this stuff on a daily basis just doesn't know. And if they knew what we were doing and what we have done and what we are fighting for right now, I think, you know, attitudes would begin to change.
Do you think it's messaging that kept the state party from being able to present candidates that could win statewide office? It seemed like Democrats weren't able to gain momentum.
Well, it's just not messaging during one campaign. I'm talking about historically. You know, you got ideas that are baked in the heads of folks right now. And you got to change, you know, the view of things. And the way you got to change that is have a clear message. And it has to be continuous so people understand.
Retired Judge Tyree Irving is the new chairman of the Mississippi Democratic Party. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Mississippi Edition podcast from MPB News and MPB Think Radio. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already, and if your app lets you, leave a comment or review. We really do appreciate it. Remember, you can always get in touch with MPB News on Facebook and Twitter, and fresh episodes of the podcast are posted every weekday morning. I'm Karen Brown. Thanks for listening. This is Mississippi Edition from MPB Think Radio.